Hello, I'm Eric Corman, Communications Director at the League of Education Voters. Hans Zeiger began serving in the Washington State House of Representatives for the 25th District, representing Puyallup, Fife, South Hill, Summit, Waller, Midland, and Parkland in 2011. After three terms in the House, he won the district's Senate seat last year and is now chair of the Senate Early Learning and K-12 Committee, vice chair of the State Government Committee, and also serves on Ways and Means. Believing that the best solutions to today's problems come from neighbors working together, Hans strives to build up our communities, not our bureaucracies. For his work to complete Highway 167 from Puyallup to the Port of Tacoma, the Associated General Contractors named Hans 2013 Legislator of the Year. A champion for students and an advocate for youth civic engagement, Hans was the 2012 Washington Student Association Legislator of the Year. And for his work to promote collaboration in the legislative process, Hans was named the co-recipient of the Gabriel Giffords Award for Civility in State Governments in 2015. Outside of the legislature, Hans leads the Chapman Center for Citizen Leadership at the Seattle-based Discovery Institute. He is an officer in the Washington Air National Guard, and he is an Eagle Scout. Hans holds a BA from Hillsdale College and a master's degree in public policy from Pepperdine. He undertook further graduate studies in political science from Claremont Graduate University. Hans is married to his wife, Erin, and they have a daughter, Clara. Hans also has two stepsons, Cullen and Cannon. Hans and Erin enjoy hiking throughout Washington. Senator Zeiger, why did you decide to run for office?
Well, I grew up learning to love the community that I'd grown up in, Puyallup, and, you know, I got politics in my blood as a teenager, getting involved in campaigns, came down here to the state capitol as a page. So all of those things were influential to me in thinking about public service. I kind of started out on an academic track, and I got my master's degree in public policy. I started a PhD in political science and was kind of on that professor route. And 2010 came along, and I was getting a little bit antsy, and I was thinking, you know, I might be interested in taking a public service turn. So I actually decided to drop out of the PhD program, go home to Puyallup, go door to door and ask people for their votes. I ended up going to 13,000 doors personally and had volunteers go to another 12,000 doors. Ended up winning that first election by 29 votes out of 52,000 cast.
Whoa.
So every vote matters.
Yeah.
And never let anybody tell you it doesn't, you know. And this is my seventh year in the legislature. Really love it. Love the relationships that you form, the opportunities to tackle tough policy challenges. And obviously, education challenges are very much before us now. We've got to do the right thing for our kids.
Absolutely. And what is your day job? How do you balance that with working in the legislature?
Well, you piece it together. I've got a couple part-time things I do outside of the legislature. You know, the legislature is more than a part-time job. It is not quite a full-time job, but it's somewhere between part-time and full-time. You know, you piece it together, and then there's a lot of other community activities that state legislators called upon to do, and I try to stay very plugged into the community. Passionate about my community, grew up in Puyallup, and it's a great place to call home.
How do you stay involved with the community? Do you do a lot of events? What is it like to be a senator in Puyallup?
There's the role that you have here in the legislature, and then there's a civic leadership role that I think legislators tend to have. So I've been involved in a number of boards, a member of Kiwanis, very active in local history as well. That's a passion of mine. I'm involved with the Puyallup Historical Society. I've been a docent there. I'm involved with the South Hill Historical Society. Been on the board of that organization. Probably most significantly, I got involved when I was in grad school in helping to record the experiences of the World War II generation in my community. And that's a project that I started at that point in time, kind of put that aside, and I've just recently come back to that. And there aren't that many people of that generation left to talk to, but I have some unfinished work in that, and I kind of want to make sure that we're getting the stories out about the people who are involved in the war from our community. You know, you've got veterans from that generation. You've got friends and family of people who were killed in the war. It's important to get their stories, and as well as Japanese Americans who were interned in the Puyallup Fairgrounds. Important that we not forget that tragic episode of our country's history.
Do you use video or audio, or are you taking print versions of their stories?
I did a lot of interviews. You know, when I started this project, I did about 120 interviews, recorded these on audio, took a lot of handwritten notes, typed up notes, wrote a lot of articles for a couple of years in the Puyallup Herald to document these stories, trying to get these things into a book form now that, you know, where we can get the story of Puyallup in World War II. It's a great story, as that story is for so many communities.
After hearing all the stories, what was your biggest takeaway?
That each generation has to do its part to defend freedom. Our generation is no exception. I think there are a lot of ways you can do that. The challenges facing each generation are different. We certainly have our share. I hope I can do my small part by the service I'm doing here in the legislature, and we've got our work cut out for us. Education is one of those big challenges. We've got to do our best. You know, there's a proud tradition in our state of making sure that education is funded, making sure that it's structured well to serve our kids. And we've got that clause in our state constitution dating back to 1889 that says that it's our paramount duty. And so we ought to take that seriously.
You've really taken a big leap when it comes to dealing with these education issues, going from the House to your first term in the Senate and then the chair of the Senate Early Learning and K-12 Committee. How was that making the transition from the House to the Senate? Was that a big learning curve?
You know, I think the House is really good preparation for the Senate. Most senators have House experience, so senators come with a lot of perspective on the legislature already, a lot of the relationships established. So I think that's a big difference. And there are a lot of differences between the House and the Senate. The Senate is a more traditional place. You got a 4-year term. You got half the number of members. I really enjoy the Senate a lot. You know, it's a great institution. It's this little miniature society of lawmakers who come from every part of the state, many with very strong personalities, and they're working together. But there's a level of respect there for one another and for our different perspectives and backgrounds. And it's fascinating to watch all of that and take part in all of that.
Was it difficult to get up to speed on all of the education issues as the chair of the committee?
I had never served on the K-12 committee in the House.
Right.
So this was a steep learning curve in one sense. I spent the entire month of December after I had found out that I was going to become chair of the committee watching videos of the Senate Early Learning and K-12 committee from the last 2 years so that I could understand what discussions have taken place, whose priorities are where, who are the stakeholders. These are all things that a committee chair has to know about. And so I just immersed myself in trying to understand that, and as well as meeting with people, stakeholders and League of Education voters, for instance.
I appreciate that.
you know, making sure that I was up on the different priorities there. And I've just really enjoyed being chair. You know, I think more often than not, the work is about finding consensus and doing some team building, and we can do that very effectively as Republicans and Democrats working together. We may differ on the specifics of policies, but overall we all want to advance education in this state, and so we're all in this together.
What a year to become chair of an education committee in the Senate. I mean, this McCleary opportunity is huge. Where do you see the political solutions, or any solution for that matter, to this huge conundrum that we're facing?
Well, the solutions are going to be in the middle, because the House is run by the Democrats. The Senate is run by Republicans. We're going to have to come up with a solution that Frank Chop, the Speaker of the House, and Mark Schessler, the Senate Majority Leader, are both going to be able to support in the end. So that's going to require a lot of heavy lifting. I actually think we're making progress on that. The progress starts with the fact that in the last two budget cycles, we have increased funding significantly for K-12 education, and we should be sure to note that, but we've got a long ways to go. The major task in front of us this year is how do we reform the inequity of funding across school districts? And that means that the educational experience for kids is inequitable right now, and we've got to change that. We in the Senate have put forward a plan that has a per pupil funding amount of $12,500, and it also has additional amounts for kids with challenges, English language learners and special education students, kids from poverty. We think that we've offered a plan that addresses these equity issues. It also addresses equity for taxpayers, because we set a dollar amount of $1.80 per $1,000 assessed value for a levy that funds state basic education. So this is no longer a local levy that varies from place to place and varies in terms of the revenue that goes toward education. We are going to set a flat rate for taxpayers, and we're going to have a consistent amount that's going to students. We want the money to follow the kids. We also have some accountability in the bill. We have some standards that we set. We want to make sure that we're making progress toward that, but we give flexibility to school districts in how they're going to achieve those standards. And so we think that it's a full plan. We know that it's being taken seriously. A lot of people are looking at it and offering good suggestions about how we can improve it. We're looking forward to these continued discussions as we move further and further into negotiations.
What's encouraging to me is that all four corners seem to be talking right now, and it's still early, and I like that. Do you think there's any possibility we might find a solution before June 30th?
I think so. I mean, I think we're obviously far apart on a lot of details, but I think we've proven on some other issues in the last few years that we can work together and get some big things done for this state. We've had strong bipartisan support for the budgets that have passed over the last couple biennia, despite the fact that we are divided the way we are in terms of Republicans and Democrats in the legislature. We passed the largest transportation funding package in the history of the state a couple of years ago, and that's a tribute to bipartisanship. We also reduced college tuition on a bipartisan basis a couple of years ago. So these are some big things we can accomplish together. I think we can do the same thing with education.
What other issues besides McCleary are you really focused on when it comes to education this session?
Well, I think there is a bipartisan interest in improving career and technical education in this state. There are a number of different proposals out on the table, and I think that we're going to do something big for CTE this year. The public is demanding that. I think people are realizing that college is not the only way for a high school student to go, you know, that there are a lot of other career options and that we need to make those available and that we need to make sure that we're feeding economic growth in this state in the best way possible. Mm-hmm. The other thing that I'm focused on, and I know others are as well, is on improving civics. This state has a half-credit civics requirement to graduate. It's part of the three-credit social studies requirement, but there's a lot more we can do on civics. Civics is an important thing for kids to have at any time in our country's history, but I think particularly right now, the country is divided. We need to learn how to talk with one another and reason together and solve problems together. Robust civics education is really critical to that. So what we've proposed is a public-private partnership. There's a coalition that's come together to advance this idea. It's modeled after the very successful financial literacy public-private partnership that started several years ago. We think that this is a really good way to promote civics for our kids.
You said it earlier. At the end of the day, we all want the same thing.
That's right.
How do your kids feel about the work that you're doing? I know your boys are a little bit older, and your daughter is, what, a year old or so?
Yeah.
So she probably doesn't have much of an opinion. But what do your boys think?
They're learning all the time about what I do, and you know, I think they appreciate it. They're in junior high and freshman in high school, so they're just taking all this in, I think. They're teaching me as much as anything about what this rising generation values. They are a high-tech generation, so the way that we present civics, for instance, and the way we present career options to this rising generation is going to look very different than, you know, how it may have been delivered in the past. We've got to keep up with that tech-savvy generation as policymakers.
What do your boys think when they come to the Capitol? Are they still kind of awed by the whole thing or like, just another day at the office?
I think they are. I think they see this place, and I think any kid who comes here gets a sense of reverence and wonder about democracy. Mm-hmm. And I certainly had that experience when I came here as a page. It's just a magnificent building, sitting through a presentation of the history of this building just recently, and it's been 90 years, literally this month, 90 years ago, that the first legislative meeting happened in the state capitol. To think that we're sitting in the same place, engaged in legislative activities where generations before us have done the same thing, faced similar challenges. You know, you look at educational challenges. We're not the first generation to face these things. In fact, from my district, John Rogers was a state senator in the 1890s, and he proposed what was called the Barefoot Schoolboy Act, and it created the state's first state property tax to fund education, which at that time resulted in $6 per student per year.
Wow.
And yeah, it's a little more expensive now, but the same questions that they were wrestling with about the priorities for education back in the 1890s are the kinds of questions that we are wrestling with today, and they are such important questions to who we are as a state and to the future of our free society.
Well, if you're following John Rogers, the bar has definitely been set for you. Hans Zeiger represents Washington's 25th legislative district. Senator Zeiger, thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you. My pleasure.